This is episode 131 of UFO Encounters. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about the Canadian Shag Harbour UFO case. On the night of October 4th, 1967, Shag Harbour was doing what small fishing communities on Nova Scotia's southern coast do after dark, settling into quiet. Shortly after 11 p.m, several residents saw a set of bright lights moving low across the sky. Accounts varied in detail, as eyewitness accounts naturally do, but the central pattern was strikingly consistent. An object, or formation of lights, passed over the area, descended toward the water, and appeared to strike the harbour. Some witnesses described four lights in a line, glowing against the darkness. Others remembered the object travelling at an angle, losing altitude in a controlled but alarming way. Then came the moment that turned a strange sighting into an emergency. The lights seemed to hit the surface offshore. For those watching, the immediate conclusion was not UFO, it was plane crash. The incident did not begin as a supernatural story or a piece of local folklore. It began as a rescue call. A young local man, Laurie Wickens, was among those who saw the lights descend. Believing an aircraft had gone down, he contacted the Royal Canadian Mounted Police Detachment at Barrington Passage. His report was direct and urgent. Something had crashed into the water near Shag Harbour. If it was a plane, people might be trapped or dying. The RCMP took the call seriously. Corporal Victor Werbecki and Constable Ron O'Brien responded, joined by other officers, as the situation developed. When police arrived, they were not greeted by a single excited witness, but by a gathering of residents who had also seen the lights. The officers looked out toward the harbour and observed an unusual light on the water, roughly where the witnesses had said the object had come down. This is one of the most important features of the case. The police were not merely collecting second-hand accounts after the fact. They were present while the event was still unfolding. The harbour itself became the focus. According to reports later associated with the case, a yellowish light or glow could be seen offshore. Some described a trail or patch on the water, like foam or disturbance on the surface. Whatever had entered the harbour had not behaved like a normal aircraft crash. There was no fireball, no wreckage drifting towards shore, no screams, no flare of aviation fuel. Yet something visible appeared to be out there, and the police treated it as a possible crash site. Local fishermen went out into the darkness, moving toward the area where the light had been seen. It is worth pausing on that image. Fishermen heading into the Atlantic at night, not for curiosity, but because they believe there might be survivors. Search and rescue in a coastal community is not an abstraction, it is a duty. Those men understood what it meant when something went wrong at sea. They went because people might be in the water. But as the boats approached, the light disappeared. Whatever had been visible on or near the surface was no longer there. Searchers found no aircraft, no passengers, no floating debris. They found no oil slick of the sort one might expect from a crashed plane. The harbour had swallowed the event, leaving only witnesses, police notes, and a deeply unsettling absence. That absence triggered the next stage of official involvement. The RCMP contacted the Rescue Coordination Centre in Halifax, which began checking whether any aircraft were missing. This was the rational next step. If a plane had gone down, there would likely be a flight plan, a distress call, a radar record, a report from an airfield. Civilian aircraft, military aircraft, and commercial traffic had to be accounted for. The answer that came back made the incident stranger. No aircraft was reported missing in the area. This changed the nature of the event. The crash had apparently been seen by multiple witnesses and reported to police. Officers had gone to the scene. A search had begun. Yet the aviation system had no missing aircraft to match it. The authorities were not dealing with a simple mistake easily closed by a phone call. The report moved upward because it remained unidentified. By the next day, the matter had drawn in the Canadian military. The Royal Canadian Air Force became involved through official reporting channels, and the case was treated as a UFO report in the literal, administrative sense. An unidentified flying object had been observed, had apparently entered the water, and could not be connected to any known aircraft. But this is where Shag Harbour separates itself from more casual sightings. It was not only a matter of people seeing lights in the sky. Something had reportedly descended in Canadian waters, and government agencies had reason to investigate. The Royal Canadian Navy's role gave the case an even more concrete character. Divers from Fleet Diving Unit Atlantic were sent to search the seabed. Their involvement shows that the incident had progressed beyond witness interviews and speculation. The authorities were looking for a physical object. Navy divers do not enter cold Atlantic water because someone saw a pretty light. They are deployed when there is a serious operational question. What, if anything, is down there? The underwater search lasted several days. Divers examined the area where the object was believed to have entered the harbour. They found no aircraft wreckage, no fuselage, no engine, no bodies, nothing that could close the case in ordinary terms. In a conventional crash investigation, wreckage tells the story. At Shag Harbour, the lack of wreckage became part of the story. The RCMP reports carried the sober tone of officers responding to a possible emergency. They did not need to argue for an exotic explanation. They simply recorded that witnesses had observed something, that a search had been conducted, and that no known aircraft accounted for the event. That official restraint is one of the reasons the case has endured. The documents do not read like fantasy. They read like bureaucracy encountering the impossible and doing its best to file it accurately. The military faced a different problem. If an unidentified object had entered the water near Nova Scotia, it mattered not only as an aviation question, but as a security question. In 1967, the North Atlantic was a zone of military vigilance. Submarines, radar systems, and naval operations formed part of the strategic landscape. An unknown aerial object descending into the sea was not merely odd, it was something defence authorities had to take seriously. This does not mean officials knew what it was. Quite the opposite. The strength of the Shag Harbour case lies in the fact that the official response was serious while the conclusion remained open. The police searched. The Rescue Coordination Centre checked aircraft records. The military investigated. Each step narrowed the ordinary possibilities without producing a final answer. The descriptions of the object itself remain compelling because lights were not remembered as a meteor streaking silently across the sky and burning out. They were seen moving in relation to the horizon, descending toward a specific area and remaining visible after reaching the water. Witnesses described a sequence, approach, descent, impact or entry, and surface disappearance. It behaved like an object with direction and continuity. In the decades since, Shag Harbour has often been called Canada's Roswell. The comparison is understandable but incomplete. Roswell is a desert story crowded with claims of recovered material and secrecy. Shag Harbour is colder, quieter, and in some ways cleaner. Its mystery rests not on a single alleged hidden object, but on the public sequence of response. The police came, the boats went out. On October 4th, 1967, something came down over a small Nova Scotian fishing village and entered the water. The police treated it as real, the military treated it as real. And more than half a century later, the most honest conclusion remains the one preserved in the case itself. Whatever came down at Shag Harbour has never been identified. In this episode, I was talking about the Canadian Shag Harbour UFO case. And my book, which is titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, will be out on May 25th. You'll be able to get it on Kindle, audiobook, and paperback. If you want to hear the extended versions of the episodes on the Alien UFO podcast, just go to patreon.com/AlienUFOpodcast. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.